From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fourth day of November 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing. She's in Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in our program, Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He'll take us on a tour of the growing regions across the planet, tell us a lot about wheat, a little bit about harvest here in the United States, and what's been happening in South America, too, on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures finished higher for the day. December contract up 4.25 at 405 at a quarter. The March at 411 at a quarter, 5 at a quarter higher. The May up a nickel at 414. July 415 and a half, 5 cents higher. And December futures 3.5 higher for next year at $3.93. And a quarter. November beans 20 higher, $10.79. January 1086 at a quarter, up 22. The March at 1079 and three quarters, 22 higher. In July, soybeans at 1073, 19 and a quarter higher. November contract at 990 and a half, up 11 and three quarters of a cent. Bean oil 61 cents higher. The bean meal up $8.50 for the day. Wheat futures, July soft red, a penny and three quarters higher at 603 and three quarters. The hard red, July at 575, up 3.5 cents. Live cattle futures December contract at 107.87 and a half, 5 cents higher for 100 pounds. February at 110.77 and a half, up 47 and a half cents. And feeders in the November $1.57 and a half higher at 137.70. January there at 135.15, up $1.97 and a half. Lean hogs December contract 95 cents higher at $66.35 per 100 pounds. The crude is up about $1.51 a barrel. Ethanol futures are unchanged. Changed at $1.51 a gallon. Heating oil or diesel fuel is up 4.7 cents at $1.17.4. And gasoline on the RBOB at $1.11. That's 3.4 cents of a cent higher. That's the wholesale price. Natural gas down 1.2 cents at $3.04.7 of a cent. The Dow is up around 600 points. The U.S. dollar is down 0.1. And gold futures for the day are around $1.60 lower at $1,906.90. Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing in Hollister, Missouri, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks so much for being with us. What'd you think of those double-digit gains today?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Well, you know, as we go further here, if we look at managed money and everything, I think you'll see part of the explanation. And I believe it's just because we saw the funds and the managed money just reducing their long positions ahead of the election, as well as ahead of the bean limits changing. You know, bean limits went to 70 cents from 60, which has an impact on margin requirement. And so I think we saw them doing some rebalancing to make sure that they can control the amount of money that they've got invested and their returns, you know, the typical things that we're always looking at. And so I just think, basically, if you look at the overall picture for today, you saw the Dow go up, you saw the dollar go down, you know, you see all the things that are going on, I believe, are very related to the idea that we're that much closer to a stimulus package for the, you know, for the economy. You know, that doesn't change the fact, though, that beans and the corn market are still saying sell now and in January, because that's where the demand is for right now. And so, and as well as, can they not be rejoicing that we're at the end of political ads? I mean, come on.
Absolutely.
Everybody has to be a little happier today. So, you know, maybe that's why they've been buying like crazy too, you know.
So let me clarify this just a bit. So what you're telling me is that you think the managed money got out of their longs for a couple of different reasons, one of them being the change in the margin requirements.
Right.
So they might have been doing some rebalancing, but they've come back in mm-hmm. to buy again to put those positions or at least part of them back in place. Is that right?
Well, they didn't get out totally, but yes, they certainly changed things around. You know, we also have the black boxes that are back in the neighborhood again. And for today's actions, You know, normally if you see the black boxes, like the black box appears to be heavy in the March corn right now, because you will just see, it'll just be pounded up and there'll be just an awful lot of market depth. Where if you look down into the beans, and let's say we look at March beans, there's not anywhere near as much depth there or as many contracts trading. And so I think we have a lot of, there's a different dynamic than what we had for a while, Todd. And so I think everybody's just breathing a sigh of relief, no matter how the election actually finishes, it's behind us.
Right.
You know, and so now we can move forward and try and figure out where do we go from here?
And what are the next steps? Let's start with the support and resistance, because next steps sometimes will follow those if they don't have anything else to go on. So
where do they
stand today?
They most definitely do follow those. There's no question about that. Well, you look at December corn, we have support at 383, resistance at 403, March 389 and 415, and December of 21, now this is a weekly, 384 and 391. When you look at beans, we've got January 1024 and 1089, March 1042 and 1099, and November, again, a weekly chart, November 21, 956 and 987. And it is trading just below the uptrend line right now in the November 21s. Dow Jones, 25,230, and resistance is at 29,568, an area that we've certainly been trading in a lot. Dollar index, 92.06, 94.65. So we're right there. And you mentioned managed money. They didn't change a lot. Soft red wheat, 41,000 long compared to 40 last week. Corn, 225 compared to 245. Beans, 215 compared to 248. Meal, 80 compared to 93. And the only winner in the whole group was soy oil, and that went to 90 compared to 88. And I do believe that some of that is related to the fact that we saw palm oil climb to 10-month highs on very, very tight supply outlooks, primarily because this is the highest we've been since January the 13th on palm oil. And if everybody's saying, you know, in their mind, why does that make a difference? Well, bean oil is a substitute for palm oil. If they can't get it, they will use bean oil in, you know, palm oil is heavily used in salad dressings and things like that. And of course, in China, that's their staple in China. And so the La Nina and that northeast monsoon, they think is going to curb Malaysia's output of palm oil. And they're also expecting that the stocks are going to be really tight when we get the numbers from October. So I think you're going to see a little more investment coming along as we go through on the soy oil side. But, you know, they just reduced positions, rebalanced, and now we're back in the neighborhood again. Export inspections, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Wheat exports running 4% ahead of a year ago compared to 4% last week. Corn 82% ahead of a year ago from 75% last week. And soybeans 74% of a year ago compared to 78% last week. So soybeans a little lower compared to last week, corn a little bit higher compared to last week. So it's going to be interesting to watch and see how all of this plays out. And I'm going to just take you to China.
Okay.
All right. And I have the U.S. Department of Agriculture attaché in Beijing put out some information on soybean imports yesterday, and it's concerning, you know. They're forecasting that they're going to fall to 95 million metric tons. They imported 98.5 million this year, which was a record high. So the reason that they figure that they were buying so much, you know, they're just buying like wild, because that's going to give them excess beginning stocks, you know, because of all the buying that's gone on, you know, driven by COVID disruptions and, you know, uncertain relationships with us. And so I think that all of our listeners have to be prepared. It's been something I've been concerned about for a while already, and that is just that, you know, they're doing some pretty heavy front loading ahead of this election, ahead of everything else, and we could just see them just step back and not do what they did. Now, this might not happen until we get into, you know, further into the end of the year or into the beginning of next year, but you've got to be prepared to take advantage of prices if you're making money at
Yeah, so the census numbers for September were really big and record, I think, for exports and to China as well. But I guess that bolsters the idea that you're telling us about, which is they've just front-loaded this thing.
Well, we've seen them do it before. You know, we saw them front-load corn, and we've seen them front-load beans and just yank the carpet out from underneath us if the price starts to get to be too high. And so, I mean, so far the Chinese government has said they're not going to interfere with the price. They're not going to do anything to lower the prices, even though their end users are screaming blood and guts. You know, they just, as of this point, are saying, no, we're not going to do anything. And so we'll have to see how it all plays out. It's not a great situation in any way, shape, or form.
Will we see any changes in the WASDE, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report, next week, or the crop production report for that matter? But I think WASDE is the one we're talking about at the moment.
Yep. I think that you have an awful lot of people out there who expect that that's what's going to happen, that we're going to see a big dramatic change in export business. It concerns me. I'll be absolutely honest with you. I wouldn't be surprised in some ways, you know, if that is what they do. But, you know, we've taken a market that was just languishing and suddenly driven it through the roof. And all of the people who were, you know, you see the people who for the longest time were saying, we're never going to get higher, or we're going to go down to $7 or whatever, now suddenly are saying, oh man, we're going everywhere. And, you know, it always makes me nervous when I see such a dramatic shift in attitude. You know, I'm looking at the January bean chart, and to me, it looks to me like it's, we got a head and shoulders that are actually showing up on the daily chart. And so, you know, I think a lot of people don't think we can ever go back down. And we know that that's not necessarily true. And so, again, I'll just go back and say the same thing. If you know you're making money, take advantage of these markets while they're here. Don't sit back. I had somebody who said to me, oh, I'm waiting until it gets to $12 on beans. They tell me it's going to $12. I'm waiting. I want to know who they are, because I haven't met them yet, you know. I have met a lot of people who speculate, but I haven't met anybody who knows for sure what's going on. And so, I mean, some of it is coming out of Brazil.
Right.
There's no question about that. Spot price in Mato Grosso was 13 and a quarter a bushel. And that's compared to a year ago when it was 6.20 a bushel for beans. And you got some states now are saying as long as the beans are planted in October, there's going to be plenty of time for safrina corn. Now we've got farmers who are concerned about the safrina corn being late, and they may reduce some of their acreage depending upon how late it was planted. But, you know, I think that there's just so much speculation and nobody knows for sure. We aren't going to know until we get into February, March. And, you know, if the rain season ends early, they may not want to risk planting corn later than normal. But, you know, if there's rain forecast into April, May, they may go ahead and plant corn anyway. So they have so many opportunities down there. It's just very different from what we have in terms of growing seasons. And one of the things I mentioned last week, Todd, about Brazil, we were talking about the fact that they lifted the import tariffs. Mm-hmm. And I think the market's pretty hepped on that. They're thinking, ooh, we're going to sell beans now to Brazil. But, you know, they have super tight supplies down there. There's no question about it. But, you know, it isn't easy to import grain into Brazil. I mean, we've been in Porto Paranaguá, and there's a couple of things that stand in the way. You know, you look at the currency exchange rate is definitely a big one. And so that means that imported grain is more expensive, because it's actually priced in U.S. dollars. If we're going to import corn, some GMO corn hybrids are not registered for use in Brazil. The biggest problem probably is with soybean imports. Most of the crushing plants are in the interior of the country. You know, they're not next to the ports. So now you got to transport the beans from the port to the crushing plant. But probably the biggest thing, and I can speak for this because I was at Porto Paranaguá, the infrastructure is geared for exports, not imports. You know, if you're going to import corn or beans into Brazil, you got to reverse the whole process, and it's expensive, not easy to do. You know, they'd have to treat it kind of like bulk fertilizer, mm-hmm. and there aren't very many ports that can do that. So right now, all the beans and corn so far imported into Brazil have come out of Paraguay, where it's just trucked across the border. So I'm hoping, you know, that we will sell them some. There's rumors that there's been one cargo that has been secured, but I wouldn't bet my life on it that it's going to be huge. And so that'll be something, too. You know, USDA is not usually one that pencils in the guesses, you know, that people say. And so I would expect that they will be conservative. But it's going to be interesting to see what it all comes down to. Argentina this week is 29.8% planted, and that's on the corn crop, compared to 40% last year. And so last year at this time, soybeans were 4% planted, averages 5 to 6. There weren't any numbers out, but they're figuring somewhere between 2 and 3. And we have seen quite a bit of generally dry weather in Argentina. So we remember the drought from not that long ago. So I think that that's something, well, I can tell you I'll be watching that closely, because that could make a huge difference for us in terms of exporting to them.
That seems odd that we would export to Argentina.
Well, you know, we've exported a lot of beans to Argentina in the past, especially during that drought time, because you know, their main export is crushing, you know, and they sell meal like crazy. And so don't ever count out the fact that we could sell them a lot of beans if they would end up in another serious soil situation and really have a big problem. Because, you know, the bean situation down there, with it being as tight as it is in Brazil, they're not going to be able to get it from Brazil. And so I think that that gives us a pretty good opportunity if we go back to that type of situation again.
Hey, thanks so much. And I'll talk to you again tomorrow for our Commodity Week program.
Sounds like a deal. Talk with you then.
All right. Jackie Vix is with Total Farm Marketing. She is out of Hollister, Missouri. Drew Lerner now joins us from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to discuss the agricultural weather forecast across the nation and the planet. Hey, good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, sir. Hope you're having a good day.
You know, it is really gorgeous. I was outside doing some yard work yesterday. Looks like I'll get to do that tomorrow and the next day. And in November, that's really pretty nice. Last week was cool and, well, not as great, but this week's looks like it's just fantastic for our part of the world. Can you tell me about the forecast for the Corn Belt?
Yeah, you know, I think it will continue to be, as you say, for just a little while longer. The western part of the Corn Belt, though, and parts of the plains will start seeing some very strong wind speeds as we go forward through the end of this week into the weekend. It'll be a pretty massive storm in the northwestern plains, and that's going to kick up a lot of wind from the heart of hard red winter wheat country right into the western Corn Belt. Wind speeds will probably be, well, for the Corn Belt, probably be more 20 to 40 miles per hour. But we could see some 50, 60 mile an hour gusts out across parts of the plains from that storm system. The good news for the Corn Belt, though, is that there is not any precipitation slated for the region through at least Sunday morning. Sunday evening, there may be a little band of thunderstorms that develops coming across Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Should be a fairly narrow band, but it will widen up a little bit as we go into Monday and early on Tuesday. And we could pull enough cool air around that we could get a little snow to fall across parts of Iowa or eastern Nebraska, and certainly eastern Minnesota. So that will take place as we go to the early part of next week. But for Ohio and Indiana and Kentucky, they're probably going to stay dry until at least late Tuesday or early Wednesday of next week, a full week from now. And so really good harvest weather for them.
Turn your attention. You mentioned the plains, and I have to admit that those strong winds are there a lot of the time, and I guess probably because that's the reason they don't have trees.
That's it. That's right.
But they do have wheat, cold enough for that just to go into dormancy at this point, and I guess you can work your way to the south on that one as well.
Yeah, you know, I think for the hard red winter wheat areas, you know, we got downright nasty cold a week ago, and some of that crop, if it was kept in that mode, would have gone into dormancy, but we've warmed up nicely. We saw temperatures yesterday afternoon in the lower 80s. I think maybe it was North Platte, Nebraska, somewhere in the southwest part of Nebraska, it got to 85 degrees yesterday afternoon. We're going to see that kind of heat continuing at least through Friday and probably Friday into Saturday. So dormancy isn't something that's going to come along right away. And that gives the crops a little extra time there to maybe get better established. There's still, of course, a lack of precipitation out there. And dryness is still an issue for some areas. There's a part of central through southwest Kansas and southeastern Colorado that did not do very well with the bigger rain event that occurred earlier this, last couple of weeks. And I don't think we're going to see any more precipitation in that area for a while. Even when it gets colder there, the rain will be short-lived, and whatever moisture they get is going to be a little too meager for a big change in soil moisture conditions.
Let's stay with wheat for just a moment. Transition, though, to Russia. That wheat crop should be kind of in the same space as the one in the United States.
That's right. It's actually a little bit more into the semi-dormancy mode at this point. They're getting that way. Over the next 10 days, it'll get a lot colder over there, and they'll start seeing a regular routine of nightly freezes. So their potential for further development is becoming less and less as each day goes by. Now, last week we did, earlier this week and over this past weekend, we did see a little bit of light rain occur in their big drought area from eastern Ukraine into western portions of Russia's southern region. That region has only had a total of two little rain events over the past couple of months. And so the crops there, even though they benefited from the moisture that just fell, it was too late. And I don't think those crops are very well established at all. So winter kill in that part of the world is going to be a bigger risk than usual this year. And it's going to be imperative that they have snow on the ground. No more precipitation of significance is coming up for a while, though.
We'll switch gears and check in on continental South American crops across the whole of all the nations there.
Yeah, you know, we're starting to see a rather classic La Nina signature in South America. It's taken for quite a while for this to evolve, but we're definitely there now. A classic La Nina usually produces below average precipitation in eastern Argentina, Rio Grande do Sul, and Uruguay, as well as southernmost parts of Paraguay. And all of that region is advertised to do poorly now with rainfall over the next 2 weeks. It may not be completely dry, but what moisture they do get is not going to be enough to bolster soil moisture, and a drying trend is going to continue in those areas. But in the meantime, we're going to see a good amount of rain occur in a big part of Brazil. The areas in Brazil that have been drying down here recently will continue drying down through the weekend. But after that, the center west and center south crop areas should start doing much better with rainfall. And the worry over this erratic rainfall pattern they've had of late should disappear.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media.